The Real Estate Talk Podcast, Season 2, with Robert Keilman and Joshua Britt.
That's correct.
Featuring topics about real estate nobody is talking about.
We need your expertise on it.
The Real Estate Talk Podcast starts now.
All right. Real Estate Talk Podcast, Season 2, episode, I think we're on 15 now.
Yeah, sounds about right.
About to talk to you about some new latest headlines surrounding the real estate market. Well, I mean, newsflash, not all of it's positive. But hey, you know, we got to deliver you the news whether we like it or not. So let's get into it. And welcome back to another Real Estate Talk Podcast. I'm Rob Keilman.
I'm Joshua Britt.
All right. We're going to give you guys some headlines into what's happening in real estate. Not always the best of news that we're looking at in real estate, but still, we got to keep you guys informed as we are, you know, getting into more and more podcasts. And we have over 16,000 subscribers now, trending towards 17,000. So everybody that has subscribed to our channel, thank you for watching our content, liking and subscribing to see more. And we'll keep delivering this content to you. And if you really want, go ahead and give us hit that super thanks icon. You know, drop us a tip. Everything goes towards production costs because we're always running in a red right now. All right? So we would always welcome the support. Anyhow. So getting right into it, home seller sentiment is lukewarm as spring home buying ramps up, okay? Elevated mortgage rates and home prices have made sellers leery about listing this spring. So 50% of sellers said they will be aligning their sales with a late year rate drop, according to Realtor.com. Now, is this rate drop they're talking about coincide with what the Fed was allegedly going to do, the Federal Reserve, to somehow have two or three interest rate drops sometime this year?
Yeah, I think everybody like left 2023 based off of the federal chairman Jerome Powell's comments that they were going to cut interest rates at least three times this year. We haven't seen it.
Nope.
I've always remained pessimistic about, you know, his quote that they were going to actually do these rate cuts this year, because a lot of the data, if you follow the data, it does not look good, and it does not look like they're going to be able to cut rates. And that's why we're seeing interest rates spike back up. Inflation is still running hot. And I always believed if inflation wasn't in check before the spring, it was going to be very difficult, nearly impossible, to get it in check during the spring and summer. You just got to, you know, and just use some common sense. Most Americans are traveling. They're going places in the spring and summer, vacations.
Yeah.
That's when Americans
spend
the most
money.
That's when they spend the most money.
So inflation data is going to go up.
It has to. It has to.
Like, because it's spending season.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, this Friday, we're expecting PCE data to come out.
Yeah.
And I'm expecting it to come out hot. And when it comes out hot, it's going to put a major damper on the real estate market. I think that people who actually listed their home, stuck to their plan, listed it at the beginning of April, now have it under contract and are going to sell it, I think those are the people we're going to say are the smart sellers throughout the remainder of this year. It's going to be a very, very damp real estate selling season for the spring and summer. Because if that PCE data comes out scorching hot like I think it's going to, it's going to force the Federal Reserve to take a very difficult stance on whether or not they keep interest rates fixed or whether they hike them. And no one wants to see another hike. That will make everybody cringe very hard to see another hike. But it may have to get to that level of making one more hike before they can start making cuts. And maybe that was in the federal chairman's thought process. He said they were going to make three cuts, but maybe that three cuts means they go up one and come down three.
Yeah. So all the data that's due this week, obviously by the time this podcast gets released, the data might already be out. But what we were talking about is, you know, offline here is that all the inflationary data and what we just described, you know, this is the spending season where a lot of people going out, you know, going to beach, it's starting to get warmer outside. People are going out and about and spending money. Whenever there's a lot of spending of money, inflation is going to go up, you know, and there's no reason to drop interest rates or reduce costs on items because it's traveling, tourism, again. So the problem with the Fed is they're trying to get down to this inflationary target of 2%. And well, every time the data comes out, it seems we're not quite there yet. It's, you know, 2.5 or 3 or whatever that range is that they're doing. It's just not where the Fed chairman wants it to be, so where he feels comfortable with lowering the federal funds rate, so that way we can get interest rates lowered on either vehicles or just the day-to-day business expenses, for because a lot of times businesses will run off of loans just to operate.
Yeah, lines of credit.
Lines of credit, and same with mortgages and whatnot. So we, yeah, and actually not even a few days ago, I think Yahoo Finance put out something saying that the Federal Reserve chairman this week doused any hope home buyers had that mortgage rates would soften anytime soon. Instead, rates jumped 7% after Jerome Powell said inflation was taking longer to come down to the Fed's intended target, a sign that any rate cuts investors were betting on may not arrive soon this year, if at all.
Yeah.
So even though there's been a proposed rate cut of up to 3 rate cuts, it may not even happen. That's just the thought of as a possibility that these rate cuts would come. But it is to be seen. They might raise interest rates up to like 8% and then drop it down to 7.5%, say, see, deal.
Yeah. you know, the thing, though, is the Feds are going to increase their rate to, if they increase, right?
Yeah.
They're going to go from 5.25 to 5.5. They'll do probably a quarter point hike to 5.5 to 5.75.
That's federal funds rate now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not the retail side when the borrower gets it.
Yes. And so when they hike theirs, then naturally the lenders who are lending in mortgages have to increase theirs as well.
To increase their profit margins so they stay in business.
Exactly. So the buck gets passed to the consumers.
Right.
As with almost everything in business, it ends up in the consumer's lap. Mm-hmm. And that's just what you can expect. So, you know, we could possibly see 8% interest rates rolling into the spring, you know, into May, June, July, home buying season when most people are normally buying. And that's going to be that's going to dampen the mood for home buying. And there's already some signs that I'm seeing that are already showing indicators that it's starting to dampening.
So this is going to be speculative, of course, but for those in the sales profession, I think with real estate, a lot of agents are going to make majority of our money in the spring and summer cycles.
Yes,
I assume that a lot of lending companies will make the lion's share of their money in the spring and summer cycles as well. Does that coincide?
Yes.
Okay. Curious if there's going to be there's more listings coming on the market.
Yes.
Less buyer demand.
Yes.
That follows a lot to do with rising mortgage rates because it's just becoming unaffordable. Are we going to see a lot of consolidation of lending companies going forward here in the future if interest rates do not subside?
Yeah, you're going to see a lot of consolidation in the entire industry. That is, there are going to be lenders that go out of business. There are going to be real estate brokerages that go out of business. I said it on the last episode, and for those who didn't watch it and didn't catch it, it was at the end. You know, through the first quarter of the 2024 season, in our local MLS, we ended last year with 678 real estate brokerages completing one transaction. Through the first quarter, only 425 have completed one real estate transaction. So almost a third of all the real estate brokerages here in our local market in Hampton Roads have not done one real estate transaction this year.
This is interesting too, because everybody else around the United States, if you're in the real estate industry, let us know in the comments below what you're seeing in your local market. We've discussed it before on podcasts that real estate is hyper-local.
Yes.
What's going on in our market doesn't necessarily translate to the Dallas-Fort Worth market or the Orlando market, you know, or something like that. So guys, please let us know in the comments and let us know about your market. Here's, I just had an open house this weekend at one of my listings, and I had somebody, an appraiser, visit me and ask me if I needed any, you know, pre-listing services, pre-appraisal services. I've had loan officers come visit me in open houses, give me a bucket of candy and tell me, you know, send all your deals to me.
Brownies.
Yeah, yeah, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time I had an appraiser come by and solicit services to me. So we got that, and we deal with contractors as well. And some of them are having a lot less business than normal. Appraisers are coming to open houses now, I guess. And you got a long line of lenders that always want, you know, you to, you know, want free chicken and want you to send things to them as a real estate agent. So are we seeing a slowdown in the markets that bad where it's affecting everything connected to real estate transactions?
Absolutely. So I got the numbers here in front of me. Okay, for, great. For yeah. our local market right yeah. here, you know, for the month of March, we ended the month with down 5.5% in pending sales.
Okay.
We
This ended, sucks too, because we're getting in the spring cycle. This yes, is supposed to pick up.
Yes. We ended with down almost 10% in settled sales at 9.66% over 2023, March of 2023. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're looking like we're going to be maybe a little bit worse than 2023 was.
Yeah.
And then new construction is just taking a major hit. New construction sales ended the month down almost 17%.
Hmm. So builder confidence is down.
Well, I got that information before, and I got that on a national level, and it actually just kind of coincides with it, right? So the builder sentiment is what their future sales expectations is up. The key thing to look at when you look at builder sentiment is buyer traffic.
Yeah.
So the buyer traffic is still negative in the builder sentiment. And what that means is builders pay a sales representative to sit at the construction sites.
Yeah.
And that person's job is to bring people in, show them their houses, and try to put them under contract. Mm-hmm. And they track every little bit of data that they can to determine how things are going. But at the new construction sales sites, they're not seeing the traffic, the buyers, right? So buyers are absent from new construction sites. I just read the sales data for retail sales. Down 9% in settled sales, almost 10%. So you're really starting to see the numbers add up here, and that, hey, buyers are really on the fence, and it's going to take something epic really to get them back into the market. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, I think I made this comment off air, but you know, I think at the end of 24, we're going to look and say, man, this was either on par with 23 or it was a step back. The numbers are just suggesting that, because at the same time, you have builder sentiment down on buyer traffic. And that's mostly because, you know, new construction, the prices of it is so high nowadays that it's just it doesn't fit the envelope for most buyers. Right. You know, at $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000, $900,000, even the million market, there's just not a lot of buyers that are willing to spend that money right now. But then also, we have permits. Permits were down 4% month over month. New construction starts down 14.7% month over month for builders.
That really sucks with a $7 million home
shortage
in the U.S.
Yes. And then even completions were down 13.5% month over month, because here's the reason why. If you're a builder and you build a house to completion and it's fully done, ready to go on the market, well, now the city can come out there and appraise it at full tax value. Mm-hmm. And now the city starts assessing you the newer taxes and charges you the newer taxes at the home price, vice the amount of, you know, money that they're paying on taxes for the land.
So is this why some builders would rather you buy the house before they build it type of
thing? Yes. Yeah. They will either, but what a lot of them will do is they will build the house to about 60 days out.
Okay.
They will completely do everything but put drywall in and put in all of the fixtures and
so
the finishings.
So it's not quite done yet.
It's not quite done. And and it will sit like that for months until they find somebody who's going to fill that spot. And then once they fill that spot, then they have their contracting crew go in there and break, you know, bust that thing out in 60 days, and voila, it's done. And here you go, buyer. It's your house, right?
Right.
But they won't complete them because of the tax cost that they'll have to incur on the new house, vice just paying a small, minimal amount of money on the land.
That's interesting.
Yes. And so when you look at that, and then the next thing you go into for existing home sales, you had a negative 4.3% month over month in home sales, and that's nationwide. So that's nationwide home sales down 4.3%. And even those builder numbers I gave you, that's nationwide also down. And then when you look at the trend line, the inventory is steadily increasing.
Yeah.
So you now got inventory increasing, you got home sales slowing down, and even here locally, we had 13.5% increase in new listings last month.
Yeah.
So we had a almost a 15% increase in listings and a settled sales down 10%.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm seeing a shift in buyer demand, at least in our local market.
Yes.
So like I got one at the top of the market in the 900s. And it's hardly getting any traffic. And it could be the quality of the house, too. Yeah, anyway. And then there could be, then I got another one that was at the affordable price point. Actually, I got two that's within the affordable price point in our market, and I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
Those things move like gangbusters.
The affordable housing range is always going to sell because, you know, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I'm pretty sure where that 7.2 million home gap is,
mostly affordable
it's
housing.
Mostly in the affordable housing range.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you have a house that comes on the market that's in the affordable housing range, you're going to have multiple people like all over that. So it's not going to last long because for every house in the affordable housing range, there may be 10 to 20 buyers for that house. For every house that comes on the market in the 900 to a million or plus, you know, maybe you got three buyers to every one of those houses.
Right.
And so therefore, obviously, the higher probability is going to be with the houses that are in the more affordable housing range. So
right. If
you're a seller out there and you're like cautious, you're like, man, I don't want to make a mistake. I want to sell my house, but, you know, I don't want to miss out at the same time. If you find yourself in that affordable housing range, I'd say anything under 350, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
It's once you go over that 350 threshold, it gets a little bit more challenging.
It gets dicey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially with higher interest rates.
Yeah.
And, you know, because you got to think about it. A person who is going to buy a house with an 8% interest rate, and we'll just say, hey, that's probably where it's going to go to. Jamie Dimon believes that also. JP Morgan CEO, he said that. A person who's buying with an 8% interest rate would, and they're buying a house, if they're buying in like the 350 price point, they would normally have been buying closer to 400,000 to 500,000 with interest rates down, you know, at a reasonable 5% interest rate.
You know, remember how it was, so that's going to get unaffordable for people. I think what's also, and this could be on certain regions of the U.S., is homeowners insurance.
I've
been hearing a lot about homeowners insurance.
Yeah.
We had a guest on before that talked about the insurance rates going up. A lot of insurance companies are unfortunately just not able to recoup a lot of their, you know, profits and stuff like that, and they're actually losing money. A lot of it has to do with a lot of the claims across the U.S. and natural disasters and so on and so forth. And Florida has been one where it's been plagued with home insurance problems. And, you know, Floridians grapple with insurance changes as hurricane season nears. So 70% of Florida homeowners or the area in which they live have been impacted by changes to cost coverage of home insurance in the last year, according to a report issued Wednesday by Redfin. Nearly 70% of homeowners in Florida and 51% of homeowners in California said they, or the area in which they live, has been impacted by increased home insurance rates or changes in coverage in the last year, according to a new report. It's also a lot of the home insurance companies in Florida are kind of, not known, or they're high risk. I mean, have you heard something about that?
Yeah, so it's really unique, you know. So I had been trying to put my finger on it because I noticed, like, at the end of 23 and even now into 24, I'm like, man, I'm getting a lot more people out of Florida. Like, what's happening in Florida? Like, people are leaving Florida to come to the Virginia Beach market, right? And couldn't really put a finger on it. And then all these reports started surfacing about homeowners insurance down there. And, you know, there was a period of time where people couldn't even buy houses because the homeowners insurance, no one would quote it. No one would insure the houses because of the major losses. In fact, I think Texas, read a story that Texas actually had the highest at, like, some, like, $23 billion worth of insurance claim damages in 2023. But here's another key indicator, though, about Florida is, you know, there was a story that broke that talked about where rent was rising at, and at the rapid rate rent was rising. And, of course, New York City was top of the list for having the highest rents, and then it was followed by Seattle and Boston, real close, second and third, and then Hawaii, Honolulu, Hawaii.
It's all coastal areas.
Yes.
Yeah.
But one of the major interesting facts that I seen was rent in Miami, Florida is down 4%. It's a negative 4%. So you're like, well, why would rents be dropping so low in Miami, Florida? Well, there's a lot of people hightailing it out of there.
Yeah.
And it's, hey, when people are leaving an area, investors have to, who are landlords that are, you know, property owners, they have to keep reducing the rent rates in order to get it occupied,
right,
to get an occupant in there,
mm-hmm,
a long-term tenant. So you're seeing the best deals on rent right now in Miami. Now, that's, they had the largest decrease, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be comparable in certain markets, right? Where they may have had a negative 4% reduction in their rental rates, they may have already been high already. So don't go running into Miami thinking it's the best place to get a bargain at.
No. Especially going to buy, because, I mean, I guess more people are going to leave the place. I guess the growing, when we talk about insurance, the growing insurance costs and natural disasters have led some of these states' residents to move, including 11.9% of Floridians surveyed respondents who said they plan to move in the next year because of rising insurance costs, and 13% of Californian survey respondents who plan to move in the next year because of climate risk or natural disasters. Even with these challenges, the net inflow to areas that are flood or wildfire prone continues to be greater than the net outflow, according to Redfin analysis from July 23. So, but this coincides in what, you know, we experienced just working leads and talking to people look interested in buying homes in our area, everywhere from, and we always say it's the usual suspects, it's Florida, you know, it's Californians, it's Chicagoans, it's, you know, and I guess a growing number of Floridians. They're starting to say, you know, enough of this, I'm out, because insurance costs, can't I even get my house insured? And I don't know. So it's going to be an interesting market. And if there's any Florida agents or investors or whatnot, you know, let us know in the comments below what you think about the Florida market and where it's at. We'd like to hear more about that on the local level, on the ground level. So,
but, yeah, because, I mean, when you break down the numbers and you look, you know, if it's going to cost you $6,000 a year to insure your home,
mm-hmm,
oh, that's like an extra $500 on a mortgage payment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could easily sell, well, you can't easily sell the house because you're escaping a problem that other people are going to have.
And not other people want it either.
Yeah, so if there's nobody who wants to jump in your grave, so to say, and take it over, you're kind of stuck with it. So you may see home sales like come to a screeching halt down there in Florida. But, you know, that's kind of, you know, I don't know if it'll get to that level right away, but you're going to see a slowdown, obviously. And in fact, it was Realtor.com, I believe, they had an article of the top 11 cities where home prices are decreasing the fastest, and five or six of those 11 were out of Florida.
Man, yeah.
It was like Tampa, Naples, Miami, and two or three more.
Well, there's some fear down there, you know, especially in Florida. I guess 27.7% of survey response in Florida said they are concerned their insurer might stop coverage on them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, well, 13.5% of respondents in California and 8.9% of overall respondents share the same fear. So 8.9% overall and 27.7 in Florida. That's a lot of people concerned.
Yeah, and again, you know, we were talking about consolidation in the industry just a little bit ago. You could start to see some insurance companies go under because, you know, some of these companies are already on thin margins, and they're just one natural disaster away from going under.
Mm. Yeah. Another survey. Oh, they surveyed real estate agents, too. Redfin found that 34.4% of agents saw an increase in issues related to home insurance during transactions in the last year, including clients having trouble obtaining affordable home insurance or canceling a transaction altogether due to home insurance. So getting down, you know, getting a house under contract, trying to sell the home, and, you know, once they start doing the underwriting, getting the home insurance, and then realizing real quick, oh my God, there's no way I can afford this home. I'm out. So,
yeah.
That sucks. And that's like 34.4% of agents saying they're concerned about that. And that's happening to them or people they know.
Yeah.
So, whew.
Yeah. And I think we actually brought that up when we had Rob Spurgeon here on the show. And, you know, it is. And it's not just Florida. I mean, yeah, it's not just Florida. Texas also. There's some growing concern in Texas as well. Because they have a lot of thunderstorms that come through there, and they have hailstorms, and those hailstorms do a lot of damage to cars and buildings, homes, things like that. So a lot of the weather changes that are happening are affecting houses and home buying and real estate in general.
Yeah, whatever anybody's idea or outlook on climate change is, whatever you subscribe to on that belief system. What's evident, though, is there are natural disasters happening that's causing home insurance rates to go up because of all the payouts at these insurance. And we talked about it, and you can go back to our last one of our previous podcast episodes that talks about home insurance and reinsurance and how everything is paid out. And it can give you an idea if you want to, you know, go into the sausage making on that process. But It's becoming a huge concern, you know, for a lot of homeowners across the country, particularly in the areas that we just talked about. So what's going to happen, you know, with all this we just talked about? What do you think is going to happen with real estate in general? Are we getting to a point where we're starting to have a huge correction here? Maybe a recession here?
No.
You don't think?
What's going on? No, because the problem here is there's not enough inventory.
That's true.
Yeah. There's not enough inventory here for it to cause a major problem. But you will start to see if the trend lines continue, if inflation is not under control in the very short term, which I don't expect it to be, you're going to see interest rates that are going to go up, that are going to be probably 8% maybe for the majority of the summer. That's going to soften the real estate market, and home buying activity is going to come to a big slowdown. Mm-hmm. If those people who were saving up money for down payments for housing, if they don't save that money and put it somewhere, the fear is that if you were saving up $10,000, $20,000 to buy a house because you know you're going to need a down payment, if you say, hey, you know what, we're not going to buy a house. We're just going to continue to rent. We're going to embrace it just a little bit longer, even though we really don't want to. We just don't want to tackle an 8% interest rate. But if they take that money and they start to splurge on other things, vacations, things like that, that's going to keep inflation higher for longer, which could continue to pump interest rates higher. There's always going to be people who are able to buy a house.
Mm-hmm.
Let me make that clear. There will always be. Even back in the 80s when interest rates were 16%, people were still buying homes.
Yeah.
Okay,
but housing was also cheaper back then, much cheaper.
It was much cheaper, but the rate is not going to scare some people. If you absolutely need shelter, you are going to get shelter. That is a fact. Will it scare off some people who are looking to maybe upsize or downsize? Yes. Mm-hmm. People will stay put for longer. But right now, you're seeing the trend line of inventory increase. And so that's kind of meaning that people are stepping out there and saying, hey, I'm going to just try to sell my house and see if I can't find something else that's more suitable for whatever I need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's also the fact that there's a lot of baby boomers who are, you know, getting to that age of where, you know, they may need to start relying on family or facilities for care. And so, therefore, most of the baby boomers own a house, and they've owned the house for a long time, and then most of them own it free and clear. And so it becomes a avenue for gaining, you know, some capital for whatever they may need, whether that's relocating to be closer to family or whether that's going into a care facility of sorts or retirement community. So you may continue to see that inventory rise. When the inventory rises high enough, you'll start to see the prices come down.
Curious if we're going to see a spike in reverse mortgages because of the baby boomers.
Oh, I think that's already passed.
That's already passed?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That was like maybe 10, 15 years ago, the reverse
mortgages. No, but we haven't seen a resurgence in it.
I wouldn't say a resurgence in it because, you know, after the baby boomer, generation, you know, we started to drop as far as the number of people we started having.
Mm-hmm.
There will always be somebody who's going to take up the opportunity for a reverse mortgage. But I think that the companies that are doing reverse mortgages right now, they got tough decisions also.
Yeah.
Because if you look and you say, hey, our home prices right now are at an all-time high, way higher than they were in 2008. If you do a reverse mortgage on somebody's house, you're taking a lot of risk.
Yeah.
You're taking a lot of risk that home prices will remain elevated for longer in order for you to recoup the money that you're giving out in that reverse mortgage. So I think that you'll probably see a slowdown in the number of companies that are offering reverse mortgages.
That'll be interesting going forward. You know what? What else is up here in the headlines? Commercial real estate foreclosures jumped 117% in March as trouble looms. Do I even really need to look into that? We already know commercial real estate in a lot of areas have been starting to become vacated due to trends of people, how they work. You know,
yeah.
A lot more work from home opportunities perpetuated by the pandemic, and doesn't look like it's going to reverse anytime soon. You give somebody the opportunity to work from home and they're actually able to do their job from home.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a win-win. You don't have to spend as much money for commercial real estate space. And, the person who works, enjoys it because they don't probably have to pay as much in childcare, on top of that. And among other things.
Driving, traveling back and forth from work with gas prices elevated as well. So for a lot of the, workforce, they would love to work from home. That's the ideal place for them. Yeah. They're in their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people who just don't like dealing with people either. Other people, like on a day-to-day basis, coming in and seeing your coworker, John, who's just a very talkative, high energy, and you're like, look, man, I'm just trying to get through my work day, and you're here with high energy. Some people just would enjoy the working from the comfort of their home more. And so businesses have said, hey, you know, I'm actually getting more production out of this worker because they're at home, they're in their own comfort zone, and they're turning out a higher, better product because of it. So some businesses have found that, hey, it's better to let them work from home than to bring them back to the office. Some other companies have forced people back to the office. But, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of the commercial real estate is going to change hands, but there's going to be buildings. Somebody else is going to own it. If you are a creative mind, now is the opportunity for you to be creative and come up with something because there will be excess commercial real estate available.
Yeah, and Joseph Biden, the president of the U.S., you know, we've been talking about him a lot. He did mention something about reconverting these commercial spaces into single family. And I know we talked about it before. You talked about, I don't know, making some money available for that. Or,
yeah, but I think we talked about it before he talked about it.
Yeah.
We talked about this probably 5 months ago. So, right. You know, it's finally catching up. It's finally peaking.
It's on his desk.
Yeah, it's peaking their interest because, yes, it is a viable option that they can do. But it's going to take the right incentives for it to be done.
A lot of incentives because interest rates keep rising is not only going to make it unaffordable for those buying those properties, but it's also going to make it unaffordable for those developing those properties.
That's right.
So unless you find some way to not just give a tax break at the end of the year, but somehow the month-to-month expenses associated with this, if there's something that could be done there, maybe. You know, I would say that's something that the government can do to help. But for the most part, I don't think the government can do much without interest rates dropping. Because that really just ties everything together is the interest rates on how the cost of money and to borrow it.
Yeah, but I think where they can have somewhat of middle ground is obviously they have to do more mixed-use development where maybe you have some, you know, retail on the lower floor, the lowest floor.
Yeah. It's like a big building. You have like a 7-Eleven at the bottom floor, and then you have residentials, a gym, a bank, you know, everything in one building.
Exactly. So you have those located on the bottom floor, ground level.
Yep.
And then you have, you know, maybe apartments on, you know, levels 2, 3, 4, wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And then on your higher levels, you have condos, penthouses, where they can make money off of the sale of those condos. I think that's the best way to do it. I think that is the smartest way of doing it. But again, it is costly because you go, like when you look at a lot of the commercial buildings, they're not set up where they have, you know, 15 bathrooms on one floor.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're going to redevelop these into apartments and condos, you now have to run plumbing for 15 units or 12 units, however many it is. And, you know, when you're working with, you know, high rises or, you know, mid high rises, you know, your structural things that you have to be cognizant of, like, hey, if I have to bust through this concrete and through this steel here to get plumbing ran or electric ran, it could cause a problem structurally.
I wonder if it also causes another problem as far as the lending is concerned, because residential requirements for like FHA, VA, conventional, like for example, fire safety, green escape and stuff like that, if the commercial building's not set up for something like that to have each individual unit have some way of egress, because like a building might have like one, like a commercial building might have a couple forms of egress, but now you have to have individual egress for all these different units.
Yeah.
So I wonder how that's gonna play out.
It's gonna be a challenge.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a challenge. I mean, again, if you're a creative mind,
you'll figure it out.
and you can figure it out. And there's somebody out there who's figured it out. And once they figure it out, then it's just everybody copy their homework, right?
Right.
And that's it. But you're gonna have to have somebody figure it out and make it make sense, and then everybody else can duplicate that process.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. That's pretty much what I got for this update this week. What do you got, man?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, hold on to your hat. We got new sales data coming out tomorrow. We got first quarter GDP coming out on Thursday, and then PCE on Friday. If you are a buyer and you are under contract or you just went under contract this weekend, you're going to want to be working close with your lender and figure out what your lock strategy is. And when I say your lock strategy, I'm saying that if your lender quoted you an interest rate this morning, most likely if you went under contract this past weekend, that this is the first opportunity your loan officer has a chance to lock a rate in for you. You want to get your rates locked in no later than Wednesday.
Yeah.
By Wednesday evening, it's going to be too late. The fear is going to set in. Anytime big data is coming out, the market gets jittery. Wednesday evening, it's going to be jittery based off of first quarter GDP numbers coming out on Thursday. And then no matter how that data comes out, good, bad, indifferent, everyone's going to still be holding their breath for PCE data coming out on Friday.
Hmm.
So that's my takeaway. That's my wrap it up. That's all I got.
All right, let's go ahead and end this. Guys, like this video, leave a comment below, subscribe for more. Until next time, see you soon.